Welcome to Context, a podcast about the history behind current events in the Middle East. I'm Becky Nyman. The history will be provided through classroom recordings of my late father, historian Dr. David Nyman. This week's episode, January, a time for reformation. In January of 1518, Martin Luther's 95 Theses, an attack on the sale of indulgences by the Catholic Church, was translated and distributed through a revolutionary technology, the printing press. Martin Luther captured the spirit of the moment with his thesis. The publication of this tract gave voice to the sentiments of a heretofore silent majority in Northern Europe. The first segment in this podcast about Reformation deals with printing and the immense impact this invention had on the history of the world.
You know, the 15th century, many significant events took place. One of the most important events in the middle of the 15th century, which had an effect on world history, was the invention of printing. Printing was one of the radical changes in civilization. Just bear in mind, of all the books that were written, of all the literature that was created, remember that everything before the middle of the 15th century was handwritten. So if you consider the creation or the production of a book before the year 1450, if you wanted a book, you either had to buy one from a scribe who had written it, or you had to write it yourself or copy it yourself. And yet many books were produced by hand, and every one was a manuscript. The Jewish people over the course of time had produced many books, and we know that by some remarkable system, they used to produce books in quantity. And we also know that when a book was written, it didn't take long before people knew about it. So there seemed to be a circulation of literature going on. But remember, everyone was written by hand. In addition to that, there was a group, a family in southern France, in the Provence. One was a member named Yehuda ibn Tibbon, and then there was Samuel ibn Tibbon. These people were translators. You know, the Jews in the Islamic Arabic world spoke Arabic and wrote in Arabic. The Jews of Spain wrote their philosophy and their science in the Arabic language. They wrote their poetry in Hebrew. But when a book was written, and it was a book of science or philosophy, it was written in the Arabic language, and the Ibn Tibbons of southern France would get a copy of it, and within the very short time that would translate it into Hebrew. First of all, obviously, they were very well trained and they were experienced at it. But nevertheless, just consider it. Here is a book, it's handwritten. Somehow several copies have been made. They get a copy and they translate it into Hebrew, and then that is copy, and so they have more. And all books that we know of, the great Greek writings, everything else, is a handwritten copy, and that is the nature of literature over the centuries. Now, Johann Gutenberg created a printing press, developed what we call movable type, and he was able to create the first printed book. What Johann Gutenberg did is fascinating. The first book that he printed, the first book that we know of that he printed, was the Bible. He printed a Latin version of the Bible. He printed a large edition, that is, large pages, about 200 or 300 copies on vellum, which is a kind of parchment, and another 200 copies on a very fine paper. And there he did. He printed the Bible and made 200 copies of it, or 500 copies of it, on a printing press. These Bibles printed by Johann Gutenberg were beautifully done, and he printed those 300 or 400 copies, or 500 maximum. That was all he did. It is told, it is said, that he went bankrupt. So his business was not that good in terms of continuity. But the printing press was invented. People already knew what it meant. And so they began to create printing presses. By the way, the reaction to printing was very interesting. Many Christians were appalled at the idea. A book can be produced in hundreds of copies. Some of them called it the work of the devil. It's some kind of magic, and it is magic in a sense. Obviously, these monks, scribes, didn't like the idea of a printing press reproducing many copies. After all, their business was writing by hand. The Jews celebrated a printing press. Imagine, instead of sitting down and copying every book, or copying every book that's important, we now have the possibility of reproducing books in quantity. And shortly after the invention of the printing press in Germany, Hebrew printing presses appeared. In 1475, just 25 years later, the first Hebrew book was printed. The first Hebrew book printed was what we call in Hebrew Chumash and Rashi, the first five books of the Bible in Hebrew, and Rashi's commentary. That was printed in 1475 in the city of Reggio di Calabria. Reggio di Calabria is a town in the toe of the boot, which is Italy. And there was a Jewish community there. There were many Jewish communities in Italy, in Sicily, and they managed to build a printing press and print the Bible in Hebrew with the commentary of Rashi in 1475. By the way, it's symbolic that that was the first book printed, because the Bible, the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, with Rashi's commentary, from the time that Rashi wrote his commentary, that became standard basic education in the Jewish world for the next 1,000 years. I mean, Jewish children were raised on the study of the Bible in Hebrew with Rashi's commentary, because Rashi, including explaining and translating and trying to clarify the text, also incorporated so much Jewish learning from the Talmud and the Midrash and many other sources. So we have the beginning of printing, and of course that is the mark of the beginning of the modern age. I mean, we date the modern age and the end of the medieval period from the 15th century, and that was one of the great inventions which ushered in the modern age.
In 1518, the stage was set. Resentment against Rome was growing, and a new sense of nationalism was arising. The spark created by the 95 Theses, combined with a super-oxygenated atmosphere created by the printing press, allowed this man's fire to explode into public consciousness.
Then, of course, Martin Luther begins to formulate his criticism of the church. Now, Martin Luther was an Augustinian monk. He was a Catholic priest, an Augustinian monk. And he was critical of what the church was doing. And at one point, he decided to list 95 complaints he had against the church. Well, if he lists 95 complaints, there were a lot of things that he expressed which were not only his own expression, but they were also the expression of the thoughts of many other people. And he wrote out these 95 complaints. He called them the 95 Theses, namely 95 points of argument, which I'll be willing to debate with anyone in the Catholic Church. And these are the 95 points of debate. And he wrote them out, and then he took them and put them on the door of the cathedral in Wittenberg and just pinned it or nailed them to the door. Well, that was a public announcement. And people went and they read them and they saw them. And he began to arouse the population, because when people read this, they said, "That's what I've been thinking." Now this man actually put it into words. Many things happen that way. You have certain ideas, you have certain misgivings, and suddenly somebody comes across and says exactly what you had in mind, which you were not able to more formulate, but which Martin Luther did. And so Martin Luther formulated his 95 Theses, and he challenged the church to a series of debates on these issues. And of course he was condemned by others in the church. On the other hand, he found a remarkable number of people who were backing him. And before you know what was going on, you realize this was not just Martin Luther, a priest, criticizing the church, but the way the things lined up, you can see the Germans were lining up behind Martin Luther because they felt they were being robbed. So you have the beginning of a nationalistic feeling which simply comes together with his ideas, and the complaints may be material and they may be real and they may be national, but they are formulated in terms which Martin Luther has put into theological terms. In other words, the same idea is expressed as an idea which becomes religiously expressed. Martin Luther claimed that the church is teaching Christianity which departs from the original expression of religious faith which we find in the Bible. In other words, he said, the church now has 1,500 years of development since the rise of Christianity, and they have built a tradition which builds on tradition, and they are telling us what the meaning of Christian faith is. But you know, why do I need the church to tell me the meaning of Christian faith? And then Martin Luther did something else. Of course, he was doing this before this whole thing started. Martin Luther decided to translate the Bible into German. Now, the Bible, of course, as we know, is written in Hebrew and in Greek. The Jewish Bible, or the Hebrew Bible, is what we call the Old Testament. The Old Testament is in Hebrew, the New Testament is in Greek. Martin Luther decided to translate the Bible into German. And then he had the Bible in German, but now there was a printing press. And so Martin Luther could say, now while I have the Bible in German, I'm going to go to the printers and I'm going to have a lot of copies printed. And then people could be able to buy a copy. And it won't be expensive because we could print them. And so now the Bible became something available to everyone. Now, Martin Luther said, the church tells us what to believe on the basis of tradition which was built up over the last more than 1,000 years. Why do I have to listen to that tradition? I can read the Bible and I can see what God wants us to believe. And so he was actually saying something which was very radical and threatening to the church. After all, if you say, as he said, there is the Bible, which is revelation, the word of God. God spoke to the prophets of ancient Israel, and the Bible is there. We can read it. We know what God said. Then you have the New Testament. The Gospels were written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We have the letters of St. Paul. All of these are biblical works. This is the foundation of our faith. Now along comes the church, and over the course of over 1,000 years, tells us what to think and how to understand this, and they interpret and interpret and interpret. And then they reach a certain interpretation and say something, and I say, wait a minute. I don't believe that that's true. I don't believe that by giving you a few dollars for an indulgence that this is going to reduce my time in purgatory, this is what you're telling me. But I don't see anything in the Bible that says that. So Martin Luther is saying, there is the revelation. God spoke to us and told us what he wants, and that's revelation. It's written in the Bible, and I can read it. And you are giving us tradition based on this revelation. What do I need you for? I have the foundation. I don't need your interpretation and your tradition when I have God's revelation in the words of the Bible itself. This was the radical statement, namely, I can reject 1,500 years of church tradition wherever I see that it contradicts the words of the Bible itself, which I can read and understand. Now, he really attacked the church in a very serious way, not just on the basis of one item, let's say, selling of indulgences, which of course was something that attracted the opposition of many people, but now he is saying something which is very fundamental and very basic. Namely, there is not necessarily truth in the tradition if it veers and turns away from the revelation. God taught us what he wants. We have the Bible. We can read it. We don't need a pope to tell us the 1,500 years of tradition. This is a very serious debate, and the debate goes on. And by the way, we have records of the debates. And of course, there is the great confrontation when a conference is called in a city in Germany, and we know it as the Diet of Worms. It was held in the city of Worms on the Rhine in Germany. W-O-R-M-S is the name of a very famous ancient city in Germany. So the Diet of Worms is that great conference at which Martin Luther appeared and debated the Pope and debated the theologians of the church. And the chairman of the Diet of Worms was the Emperor Charles V, devoted Catholic. At the Diet of Worms, in addition to all the arguments that were said, this is where Martin Luther made his very famous statement. This is what I believe. Here I stand. I will not retreat. I am telling you the will of God as expressed in the Holy Scriptures, the revelation of God. I reject the teachings of the church which deviate from the revelation. That's it. And of course, by saying that, he was already putting in official form his statement of what we call the Protestant Reformation. Protestant, of course, protesting against the church. Reformation, reforming the church and starting all over again. And Martin Luther returned to Germany. By the way, he had to escape from the place where the conference was held because, of course, he was threatened. And once he came back to Germany, he began to change many things, including this concept of celibacy of the clergy. He said they imposed that for a certain reason. Again, it's tradition. Something happened. The church was corrupt. They had to say priests shouldn't get married. That doesn't make any sense anymore. And Martin Luther himself decided he was going to get married. He married a woman who was in holy orders, and she was a nun, and she left the holy orders, and they got married. So he started this great revolution, which became the Protestant Reformation. And of course, it embraced many of the people of Germany. The Rhineland still remained Catholic to the present day, and other parts of Germany became Protestant, especially the areas of the north and Prussia. And then it spread into the Netherlands, where the Dutch Reformed Church also emerged as a Reformation. And now the Catholic Church was split. So Christianity, which has split between Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholic, now Roman Catholicism split between Roman Catholicism and Protestantism. And then other reformers emerged as well. A man by the name of John Calvin, who wrote his Institutes of the Church, which formed the basis of what we call Presbyterian Christianity. And there was Zwingli, a Swiss theologian, who also wrote his books. And then there were the churches in Scotland who began to preach a Protestant form of Christianity and founded established churches which exist down to the present day.
That was Dr. David Nyman on the Protestant Reformation. The preceding segments are part of a series of lectures called The Church and the Jews, available for purchase on audible.com and at drdavidnyman.com. Thank you for listening to Context, the podcast. You can follow the Context blog on the Times of Israel website, join the Dr. David Nyman Google Plus circle, and follow my tweets at Dr. David Nyman on Twitter. And please visit drdavidnyman.com for more audio, video, and essays by the man who could put it all in perspective.